Good. Tick-Tock pulled Jake back over to the chair by his nose, sat down, and cocked his leg over the arm again. Let's have a nice little chin, then. We'll begin with your name, shall we? Just what might that be, Cully?
Jake Chambers.
With his nose pinched shut, his voice sounded nasal and foggy. And are you a Nazi, Jake Chambers? For a moment, Jake wondered if this was a peculiar way of asking him if he was blind. But of course they could all see he wasn't.
I don't understand what...
Tick-Tock shook him back and forth by the nose. Nazi, Nazi, you just want to stop playing with me, boy.
I don't understand...
Jake began, and then he looked at the old machine gun hanging from the chair and thought once more of the crashed Focke Wulf. The pieces fell together in his mind.
No, I'm not a Nazi, I'm an American. All that ended long before I was born.
The Tick-Tock man released his hold on Jake's nose, which immediately began to gush blood.
You could have told me that in the first place and saved yourself all sorts of pain, Jake Chambers. But at least now you understand how we do things around here, don't you?
Jake nodded. Aye, well enough. We'll start with the simple questions. Jake's eyes drifted back to the ventilator grill. What he had seen before was still there. It hadn't been just his imagination. Two gold-ringed eyes floated in the dark behind the chrome louvers. Oi! Tick-Tock slapped his face, knocking him back into Gasher, who immediately pushed him forward again.
It's school time, dear heart, Gasher whispered. Mind your lessons now, mind them very sharp.
Look at me when I'm talking to you, Tick-Tock said. I'll have some respect, Jake Chambers, or I'll have your balls.
All right.
Tick-Tock's green eyes gleamed dangerously. All right, what? Jake groped for the right answer, pushing away the tangle of questions and the sudden hope which had dawned in his mind, and what came was what would have served at his own cradle of the pubes, otherwise known as the Piper School.
All right, sir.
Tick-Tock smiled.
That's a start, boy, he said, and leaned forward, forearms on his thighs. Now, what's an American?
Jake began to talk, trying with all his might not to look toward the ventilator grill as he did so. 29. Roland holstered his gun, laid both hands on the valve wheel, and tried to turn it. It wouldn't budge. That didn't much surprise him, but it presented serious problems. Oi stood by his left boot, looking up anxiously, waiting for Roland to open the door so they could continue the journey to Jake. The gunslinger only wished it was that easy. It wouldn't do to simply stand out here and wait for someone to leave. It might be hours or even days before one of the Greys decided to use this particular exit again. Gasher and his friends might take it into their heads to flay Jake alive while the gunslinger was waiting for it to happen. He leaned his head against the steel but heard nothing. That didn't surprise him either. He had seen doors like this a long time ago. You couldn't shoot out the locks, and you certainly couldn't hear through them. There might be one, there might be two, facing each other, with some dead air space in between. Somewhere, though, there would be a button which would spin the wheel in the middle of the door and release the locks. If Jake could reach that button, all might still be well. Roland understood that he was not a full member of this quartet. He guessed that even Oi was more fully aware than he of the secret life which existed at its heart. He very much doubted that the bumbler had tracked Jake with his nose alone through those tunnels where water ran in polluted streamlets. Nevertheless, he had been able to help Jake when the boy had been trying to cross from his world to this one. He had been able to see. And when Jake had been trying to regain the key he had dropped, he had been able to send a message. He had to be very careful about sending messages this time. At best, the Greys would realize something was up. At worst, Jake might misinterpret what Roland tried to tell him and do something foolish. But if he could see... Roland closed his eyes and bent all his concentration toward Jake. He thought of the boy's eyes and sent his ka out to find them. At first there was nothing, but at last an image began to form. It was a face framed by long gray-blonde hair. Green eyes gleamed in deep sockets like fire dims in a cave. Roland quickly understood that this was the TikTok man, and that he was a descendant of the man who had died in the air carriage. Interesting, but of no practical value in this situation. He tried to look beyond the TikTok man, to see the rest of the room in which Jake was being held, and the people in it.
"Jake!"
Boy whispered, as if reminding Roland that this was neither the time nor the place to take a nap.
"Shh,"
the gunslinger said, not opening his eyes. But it was no good. He caught only blurs, probably because Jake's concentration was focused so tightly on the TikTok man. Everyone and everything else was little more than a series of gray-shrouded shapes on the edges of Jake's perception. Roland opened his eyes again and pounded his left fist lightly into the open palm of his right hand. He had an idea that he could push harder and see more, but that might make the boy aware of his presence. That would be dangerous. Gasher might smell a rat, and if he didn't, the TikTok man would. He looked up at the narrow ventilator grills, then down at Oi. He had wondered several times just how smart he was. Now it looked as though he was going to find out. Roland reached up with his good left hand, slipped his fingers between the horizontal slats of the ventilator grill closest to the hatchway through which Jake had been taken, and pulled. The grill popped out in a shower of rust and dried moss. The hole behind it was far too small for a man, but not for a billy bumbler. He put the grill down, picked Oi up, and spoke softly into his ear. "Go. See. Come back. Do you understand? Don't let them see you. Just go and see and come back." Oi gazed up into his face, saying nothing, not even Jake's name. Roland had no idea if he had understood or not, but wasting time in ponderation would not help matters. He placed Oi in the ventilator shaft. The bumbler sniffed at the crumbles of dried moss, sneezed delicately, then only crouched there with the draft rippling through his long, silky fur, looking doubtfully at Roland with his strange eyes.
"Go and see and come back," Roland repeated in a whisper,
and Oi disappeared into the shadows, walking silently, claws retracted on the pads of his paws. Roland drew his gun again and did the hardest thing. He waited. Oi returned less than 3 minutes later. Roland lifted him out of the shaft and put him on the floor. Oi looked up at him with his long neck extended.
"How many, Oi?" Roland asked. "How many did you see?"
For a long moment he thought the bumbler wouldn't do anything except go on staring in his anxious way. Then he lifted his right paw tentatively in the air, extended the claws, and looked at it, as if trying to remember something very difficult. At last he began to tap on the steel floor. 1, 2, 3, 4. A pause. Then 2 more, quick and delicate, the extended claws clicking lightly on the steel. 5, 6. Oi paused a second time, head down, looking like a child lost in the throes of some titanic mental struggle. Then he tapped his claws one final time on the steel, looking up at Roland as he did it.
"Jake!"
6 grays and Jake. Roland picked Oi up and stroked him.
"Good,"
he murmured into Oi's ear. In truth, he was almost overwhelmed with surprise and gratitude. He had hoped for something, but this careful response was amazing, and he had few doubts about the accuracy of the count.
"Good boy!"
"Oi! Jake!"
Yes, Jake. Jake was the problem. Jake, to whom he had made a promise he intended to keep. The gunslinger thought deeply in his strange fashion, that combination of dry pragmatism and wild intuition which had probably come from his strange grandmother, Deirdre the Mad, and had kept him alive all these years after his old companions had passed. Now he was depending on it to keep Jake alive, too. He picked Oi up again, knowing Jake might live, might, but the bumbler was almost certainly going to die. He whispered several simple words into Oi's cocked ear, repeating them over and over. At last he ceased speaking and returned him to the ventilator shaft.
"Good boy," he whispered. "Go on now. Get it done.
My heart goes with you.
Oi, heart, ache,
the bumbler whispered, and then scurried off into the darkness again. Roland waited for all hell to break loose. Ask me a question, Eddie Dean of New York, and it better be a good one. If it's not, you and your woman are going to die no matter where you came from. And dear God, how did you respond to something like that? The dark red light had gone out. Now the pink one reappeared.
Hurry!
The faint voice of little Blaine urged them.
He's worse than ever before. Hurry or he'll kill you!
Eddie was vaguely aware that flocks of disturbed pigeons were still swooping aimlessly through the cradle, and that some of them had smashed headfirst into the pillars and dropped dead on the floor. "What does it want?" Susanna hissed at the speaker and the voice of little Blaine somewhere behind it. "For God's sake, what does it want?" No reply, and Eddie could feel any period of grace they might have started with slipping away. He thumbed the talk listen and spoke with frantic vivacity as the sweat trickled down his cheeks and neck. "Ask me a question. So, Blaine, what have you been up to these last few years? I guess you haven't been doing the old southeast run, huh? Any reason why not? Haven't been feeling up to snuff?" No sound but the rustle and flap of the pigeons. In his mind he saw Artis trying to scream as his cheeks melted and his tongue caught fire. He felt the hair on the nape of his neck stirring and clumping together. Fear or gathering electricity? Hurry, he's worse than ever before. "Who built you, anyway?" Eddie asked frantically, thinking if I only knew what the fucking thing wanted. "Want to talk about that? Was it the Greys? Nah, probably the great old ones, right? Or..." He trailed off. Now he could feel Blaine's silence as a physical weight on his skin, like fleshy, groping hands. "What do you want?" he shouted. "Just what in hell do you want to hear?" No answer, but the buttons on the box were glowing an angry dark red again, and Eddie knew their time was almost up. He could hear a low buzzing sound nearby, a sound like an electrical generator, and he didn't believe that sound was just his imagination, no matter how much he wanted to think so. "Blaine!" Susanna shouted suddenly. "Blaine, do you hear me?" No answer, and Eddie felt the air was filling up with electricity, as a bowl under a tap fills up with water. He could feel it crackling bitterly in his nose with every breath he took, could feel his fillings buzzing like angry insects. "Blaine, I've got a question, and it is a pretty good one. Listen." She closed her eyes for a moment, fingers rubbing frantically at her temples, and then opened her eyes again. "There is a thing that nothing is, and yet it has a name. 'Tis sometimes tall and sometimes short." She broke off and stared at Eddie with wide, agonized eyes. "Help me, I can't remember how the rest of it goes." Eddie only stared at her as if she had gone mad. What in the name of God was she talking about? Then it came to him, and it made a weirdly perfect sense, and the rest of the riddle clicked into his mind as neatly as the last two pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. He swung toward the speaker again. "It joins our talks, it joins our sport, and plays at every game. What is it? That's our question, Blaine. What is it?" The red light illuminating the command and enter buttons below the diamond of numbers blinked out. There was an endless moment of silence before Blaine spoke again. But Eddie was aware that the feeling of electricity crawling all over his skin was diminishing. "A shadow, of course," the voice of Blaine responded. "An easy one, but not bad. Not bad at all." The voice coming out of the speaker was animated by a thoughtful quality, and something else as well. Pleasure? Longing? Eddie couldn't quite decide. But he did know there was something in that voice that reminded him of little Blaine. He knew something else as well. Susanna had saved their bacon, at least for the time being. He bent down and kissed her cold, sweaty brow. "Do you know any more riddles?" Blaine asked. "Yes, lots," Susanna said at once. "Our companion Jake has a whole book of them." "From the New York place of where?" Blaine asked, and now the tone of his voice was perfectly clear, at least to Eddie. Blaine might be a machine, but Eddie had been a heroin junkie for 6 years, and he knew stone greed when he heard it. "From New York, right," he said. "But Jake has been taken prisoner. A man named Gasher took him." No answer. And then the buttons glowed that faint rosy pink again.
"Good so far," the voice of little Blaine whispered. "But you must be careful. He's tricky."
The red lights reappeared at once. "Did one of you speak?" Blaine's voice was cold, and Eddie could have sworn it was so suspicious. He looked at Susanna. Susanna looked back with the wide, frightened eyes of a little girl who has heard something unnameable moving slyly beneath the bed.
"I cleared my throat, Blaine," Eddie said.
He swallowed and armed sweat from his forehead.
Shit, tell the truth and shame the devil. I'm scared to death."
"That is very wise of you. These riddles of which you speak, are they stupid? I won't have my patience tried with stupid riddles."
"Most are smart," Susanna said, but she looked anxiously at Eddie as she said it.
"You lie. You don't know the quality of these riddles at all."
"How can you say
voice analysis, fricative patterns, and diphthong stress emphasis provide a reliable quotient of truth-untruth? Predictive reliability is 97% plus or minus 0.5%. The voice fell silent for a moment, and when it spoke again, it did so in a menacing drawl that Eddie found very familiar. It was the voice of Humphrey Bogart.
"I suggest you stick to what you know, sweetheart. The last guy that tried shading the truth with me wound up at the bottom of the Seine in a pair of cement cowboy boots."
"Christ," Eddie said. "We walked 400 miles or so to meet the computer version of Rich Little. How can you imitate guys like John Wayne and Humphrey Bogart, Blaine, guys from our world?"
"Nothing."
"Okay, you don't want to answer that one. How about this one? If a riddle was what you wanted, why didn't you just say so?"
Again, there was no answer, but Eddie discovered that he didn't really need one. Blaine liked riddles, so he had asked them one. Susanna had solved it. Eddie guessed that if she had failed to do so, the two of them would now look like a couple of giant economy-sized charcoal briquettes lying on the floor of the Cradle of Lud.
"Blaine?"
Susanna asked uneasily. There was no answer.
"Blaine, are you still there?"
"Yes. Tell me another one."
"When is a door not a door?" Eddie asked.
"When it's ajar. You'll have to do better than that if you really expect me to take you somewhere. Can you do better than that?"
"If Roland gets here, I'm sure we can," Susanna said. "Regardless of how good the riddles in Jake's book may be, Roland knows hundreds. He actually studied them as a child."
Having said this, she realized she could not conceive of Roland as a child.
"Will you take us, Blaine?"
"I might," Blaine said, and Eddie was quite sure he heard a dim thread of cruelty running through that voice.
"But you'll have to prime the pump to get me going, and my pump primes backward."
"Meaning what?" Eddie asked, looking through the bars at the smooth pink line of Blaine's back. But Blaine did not reply to this or any of the other questions they asked. The bright orange lights stayed on, but both Big Blaine and Little Blaine seemed to have gone into hibernation. Eddie, however, knew better. Blaine was awake. Blaine was watching them. Blaine was listening to their fricative patterns and diphthong stress emphasis. He looked at Susanna.
"You'll have to prime the pump, but my pump primes backward," he said bleakly. "It's a riddle, isn't it?"
"Yes, of course."
She looked at the triangular window, so like a half-lidded, mocking eye, and then pulled him close so she could whisper in his ear.
"It's totally insane, Eddie. Schizophrenic, paranoid, probably delusional as well."
"Tell me about it," he breathed back.
"What we've got here is a lunatic genius ghost in the computer monorail that likes riddles and goes faster than the speed of sound. Welcome to the fantasy version of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest."
"Do you have any idea what the answer is?"
Eddie shook his head.
"You?" "A little tickle way back in my mind. False light, probably. I keep thinking about what Roland said. A good riddle is always sensible and always solvable. It's like a magician's trick."
"Misdirection." She nodded.
"Go fire another shot, Eddie. Let him know we're still here."
"Yeah. Now if we could only be sure that they're still there."
"Do you think they are, Eddie?"
Eddie had started away, and he spoke without stopping or looking back.
"I don't know. That's a riddle not even Blaine could answer."
31.
"Could I have something to drink?"
Jake asked. His voice came out sounding furry and nasal. Both his mouth and the tissues in his abused nose were swelling up. He looked like someone who has gotten the worst of it in a nasty street fight.
"Oh, yes," TikTok replied judiciously. "You could. I'd say you certainly could. We have lots to drink, don't we, Copperhead?"
"Aye,"
said a tall, bespectacled man in a white silk shirt and a pair of black silk trousers. He looked like a college professor in a turn-of-the-century Punch cartoon.
"No shortage of potables here."
The TikTok man, once more seated at ease in his throne-like chair, looked humorously at Jake.
"We have wine, beer, ale, and, of course, good old water. Sometimes that's all a body wants, isn't it? Cool, clear, sparkling water. How does that sound, Cully?"
Jake's throat, which was also swollen and as dry as sandpaper, prickled painfully.
"Sounds good," he whispered. "It's woke my thirsty up, I know that," TikTok said.
His lips spread in a smile. His green eyes sparkled.
"Bring me a dip or a water, Tilly. I'll be damned if I know what's happened to my manners."
Tilly stepped through the hatchway on the far side of the room. It was opposite the one through which Jake and Gasher had entered. Jake watched her go and licked his swollen lips.
"Now," TikTok said, returning his gaze to Jake, "you say the American city you came from, this New York, is much like Lud."
"Well, not exactly."
"But you do recognize some of the machinery," TikTok pressed. "Valves and pumps and such, not to mention the fire dim tubes."
"Yes. We call it neon, but it's the same."
TikTok reached out toward him. Jake cringed, but TikTok only patted him on the shoulder.
"Yes, yes, close enough." His eyes gleamed. "And you've heard of computers?"
"Sure."
But Tilly returned with the dipper and timidly approached the TikTok man's throne. He took it and held it out to Jake. When Jake reached for it, TikTok pulled it back and drank himself. As Jake watched the water trickle from TikTok's mouth and roll down his naked chest, he began to shake. He couldn't help it. The TikTok man looked over the dipper at him as if just remembering that Jake was still there. Behind him, Gasher, Copperhead, Brandon, and Hoots were grinning like schoolyard kids who have just heard an amusing, dirty joke.
"Why, I got thinking about how thirsty I was and forgot all about you," TikTok cried. "That's mean as hell, God's damn my eyes. But, of course, it looked so good. And it is good. Cold, clear."
He held the dipper out to Jake. When Jake reached for it, TikTok pulled it back.
"First, Cully, tell me what you know about dipolar computers and transitive circuits," he said coldly.
"What?"
Jake looked toward the ventilator grill, but the golden eyes were still gone. He was beginning to think he had imagined them after all. He shifted his gaze back to the TikTok man, understanding one thing clearly. He wasn't going to get any water. He had been stupid to even dream he might.
"What are dipolar computers?"
The TikTok man's face contorted with rage. He threw the remainder of the water into Jake's bruised, puffy face.
"Don't you play it light with me!"
he shrieked. He stripped off the Seiko watch and shook it in front of Jake.
"When I asked you if this ran on a dipolar circuit, you said it didn't. So don't tell me you don't know what I'm talking about when you already made it clear that you do!"
But...
Jake couldn't go on. His head was whirling with fear and confusion. He was aware, in some far-off fashion, that he was licking as much water as he could off his lips.
"There's 1,000 of those ever-fucking dipolar computers right under the ever-fucking city. Maybe 100,000, and the only one that still works don't do a thing except play Watch Me and run those drums. I want those computers. I want them working for me!"
The TikTok man bolted forward on his throne, seized Jake, shook him back and forth, and then threw him to the floor. Jake struck one of the lamps, knocking it over, and the bulb blew with a hollow coughing sound. Tilly gave a little shriek and stepped backward, her eyes wide and frightened. Copperhead and Brandon looked at each other uneasily. TikTok leaned forward, elbows on his thighs, and screamed into Jake's face,
"I want 'em and I mean to have 'em!"
Silence fell in the room, broken only by the soft whoosh of warm air pouring from the ventilators. Then the twisted rage on the TikTok man's face disappeared so suddenly it might never have existed at all. It was replaced by another charming smile. He leaned further forward and helped Jake to his feet.
"Sorry. I get thinking about the potential of this place, and sometimes I get carried away. Please accept my apology, Cully."
He picked up the overturned dipper and threw it at Tilly.
"Fill this up, you useless bitch. What's the matter with you?"
He turned his attention back to Jake, still smiling his TV game show host smile.
"All right. You've had your little joke, and I've had mine. Now, tell me everything you know about dipolar computers and transitive circuits, then you can have a drink."
Jake opened his mouth to say something, he had no idea what. And then, incredibly, Roland's voice was in his mind, filling it. "Distract them, Jake, and if there's a button that opens the door, get close to it." The TikTok man was watching him closely.
"Something just came into your mind, didn't it, Cully? I always know, so don't keep it a secret. Tell your old friend, Tiki."
Jake caught movement in the corner of his eye, although he did not dare glance up at the ventilator panel, not with all the TikTok man's notice bent upon him. He knew that Oi was back, peering down through the louvers.
"Distract them." And suddenly Jake knew just how to do that. "I did think of something," he said. "But it wasn't about computers. It was about my old pal Gasher and his old pal Hoots."
"Here, here," Gasher cried. "What are you talking about, boy?"
"Why don't you tell TikTok who really gave you the password, Gasher? Then I can tell TikTok where you keep it."
The TikTok man's puzzled gaze shifted from Jake to Gasher.
"What's he talking about?"
"Nothing,"
Gasher said, but he could not forbear a quick glance at Hoots.
"He's just running his gob, trying to get off the hot seat by putting me on it, Tiki. I told you he was pert. Didn't I say—"
"Take a look in his scarf, why don't you?" Jake asked. "He's got a scrap of paper with a word written on it. I had to read it to him because he couldn't even do that."
There was no sudden rage on TikTok's part this time. His face darkened gradually instead, like a summer sky before a terrible thunderstorm.
"Let me see your scarf, Gasher," he said in a soft, thick voice. "Let your old pal sneak a peek."
"He's lying, I tell you,"
Gasher cried, putting his hands on his scarf and taking two steps backward toward the wall. Directly above him, Oi's gold-ringed eyes gleamed.
"All you got to do is look in his face to see the lion's what a pert little cur like him does best."
The TikTok man shifted his gaze to Hoots, who looked sick with fear.
"What about it?" TikTok asked in his soft, terrible voice. "What about it, Hooter Man? I know you and Gasher was butt buddies of old, and I know you've the brains of a hung goose, but surely not even you could be stupid enough to write down a password to the inner chamber. Could you? Could you?"
I only thought," Hoots began.
"Shut up!" Gasher shouted.
He shot Jake a look of pure, sick hate.
"I'll kill you for this, dearie. See if I don't."
"Take off your scarf, Gasher," the TikTok man said. "I want to look inside it." Jake sidled a step closer to the podium with the buttons on it.
"No!"
Gasher's hands returned to the scarf and pressed against it as if it might fly away of its own accord.
"Be damned if I will!"
"Brandon, grab him," TikTok said. Brandon lunged for Gasher. Gasher's move wasn't as quick as TikTok's had been, but it was quick enough. He bent, yanked a knife from the top of his boot, and buried it in Brandon's arm.
"Oh, you bastard!"
Brandon shouted in surprise and pain as blood began to pour out of his arm.
"Look at what you did!"
Tilly screamed.
"Do I have to do everything around here myself?"
TikTok shouted, more exasperated than angry, it seemed, and rose to his feet. Gasher retreated from him, weaving the bloody knife back and forth in front of his face in mystic patterns. He kept his other hand planted firmly on top of his head.
"Draw back," he panted. "I love you like a brother, Tiki, but if you don't draw back, I'll hide this blade in your guts, so I will."
"You? Not likely," the TikTok man said with a laugh. He removed his own knife from its scabbard and held it delicately by the bone hilt. All eyes were on the two of them. Jake took two quick steps to the podium with its little cluster of buttons and reached for the one he thought the TikTok man had pushed. Gasher was backing along the curved wall, the tubes of light painting his mandrous-riddled face in a succession of sick colors, bile green, fever red, jaundice yellow. Now it was the TikTok man standing below the ventilator grill where Oi was watching. "Put it down, Gasher," TikTok said in a reasonable tone of voice. "You brought the boys, I asked. If anyone else gets pricked over this, it'll be Hoots, not you. Just show me." Jake saw Oi crouching to spring and understood two things, what the bumbler meant to do and who had put him up to it.
"Oi, no!"
he screamed. All of them turned to look at him. At that moment, Oi leaped, hitting the flimsy ventilator grill and knocking it free. The TikTok man wheeled toward the sound, and Oi fell onto his upturned face, biting and slashing. 32. Roland heard it faintly, even through the twin doors. "Oi, no!" And his heart sank. He waited for the valve wheel to turn, but it did not. He closed his eyes and sent with all his might. "The door, Jake! Open the door!" He sensed no response, and the pictures were gone. His communication line with Jake, flimsy to begin with, had now been severed. 33. The TikTok man blundered backward, cursing and screaming and grabbing at the writhing, biting, digging thing on his face. He felt Oi's claws punch into his left eye, popping it, and a horrible red pain sank into his head like a flaming torch thrown down a deep well. At that point, rage overwhelmed pain. He seized Oi, tore him off his face, and held him over his head, meaning to twist him like a rag.
"No!"
Jake wailed. He forgot about the button which unlocked the doors and seized the gun hanging from the back of the chair. Tilly shrieked. The others scattered. Jake leveled the old German machine gun at the TikTok man. Oi, upside down in those huge, strong hands and bent almost to the snapping point, writhed madly and slashed his teeth into the air. He shrieked in agony, a horribly human sound.
"Leave him alone, you bastard!"
Jake screamed and pressed the trigger. He had enough presence of mind left to aim low. The roar of the Schmeisser 40 was ear-splitting in the enclosed space, although it fired only 5 or 6 rounds. One of the lighted tubes popped in a burst of cold orange fire. A hole appeared an inch above the left knee of the TikTok man's tight-fitting trousers, and a dark red stain began to spread at once. TikTok's mouth opened in a shocked O of surprise, an expression which said more clearly than words could have done that for all his intelligence, TikTok had expected to live a long, happy life where he shot people but was never shot himself. Shot at, perhaps, but actually hit? That surprised expression said that just wasn't supposed to be in the cards. "Welcome to the real world, you fuck," Jake thought. TikTok dropped Oi to the iron grillwork floor to grab at his wounded leg. Copperhead lunged at Jake, got an arm around his throat, and then Oi was on him, barking shrilly and chewing at Copperhead's ankle through the black silk pants. Copperhead screamed and danced away, shaking Oi back and forth at the end of his leg. Oi clung like a limpet. Jake turned to see the TikTok man crawling toward him. He had retrieved his knife, and the blade was now clamped between his teeth. "Goodbye, Tiki," Jake said, and pressed the Schmeisser's trigger again. Nothing happened. Jake didn't know if it was empty or jammed, and this was hardly the time to speculate. He took 2 steps backward before finding further retreat blocked by the big chair which had served the TikTok man as a throne. Before he could slip around, putting the chair between them, TikTok had grabbed his ankle. His other hand went to the hilt of his knife. The ruins of his left eye lay on his cheek like a glob of mint jelly. The right eye glared up at Jake with insane hatred. Jake tried to pull away from the clutching hand and went sprawling on the TikTok man's throne. His eye fell on a pocket which had been sewn into the right-hand armrest. Jutting from the elasticized top was the cracked pearl handle of a revolver.
"Oh, Kali, how you'll suffer,"
the TikTok man whispered ecstatically. The O of surprise had been replaced by a wide, trembling grin.
"Oh, how you'll suffer, and how happy I'll be to... What?"
The grin slackened, and the surprised O began to reappear as Jake pointed the cheesy, nickel-plated revolver at him and thumbed back the hammer. The grip on Jake's ankle tightened until it seemed to him that the bones there must snap.
"You dasn't,"
Tick-Tock said in a screamy whisper.
"Yes, I do,"
Jake said grimly and pulled the trigger of the Tick-Tock man's run-out gun. There was a flat crack, much less dramatic than the Schmeisser's Teutonic roar. A small black hole appeared high up on the right side of Tick-Tock's forehead. The Tick-Tock man went on staring up at Jake, disbelief in his remaining eye. Jake tried to make himself shoot him again and couldn't do it. Suddenly a flap of the Tick-Tock man's scalp peeled away like old wallpaper and dropped on his right cheek. Roland would have known what this meant. Jake, however, was now almost beyond coherent thought. A dark, panicky horror was spinning across his mind like a tornado funnel. He cringed back in the big chair as the hand on his ankle fell away and the Tick-Tock man collapsed forward on his face.
The door! He had to open the door and let the gunslinger in!
Focusing on that and nothing but, Jake let the pearl-handled revolver clatter to the iron grating and pushed himself out of the chair. He was reaching again for the button he thought he had seen Tick-Tock push when a pair of hands settled around his throat and dragged him backward away from the podium.
"I said I'd kill you for it, my nasty little pal," a voice whispered in his ear, "and the Gasher Man always keeps his promises."
Jake flailed behind him with both hands and found nothing but thin air. Gasher's fingers sank into his throat, choking relentlessly. The world started to turn gray in front of his eyes. Gray quickly deepened to purple, and purple to black. 34. A pump started up, and the valve wheel in the center of the hatch spun rapidly.
"Gods be thanked," Roland thought.
He seized the wheel with his right hand almost before it had stopped moving and yanked it open. The other door was ajar. From beyond it came the sounds of men fighting and Oi's bark, now shrill with pain and fury. Roland kicked the door open with his boot and saw Gasher throttling Jake. Oi had left Copperhead and was now trying to make Gasher let go of Jake, but Gasher's boot was doing double duty, protecting its owner from the bumbler's teeth and protecting Oi from the virulent infection which ran in Gasher's blood. Brandon stabbed Oi in the flank again in an effort to make him stop worrying Gasher's ankle, but Oi paid no heed. Jake hung from his captor's dirty hands like a puppet whose strings have been cut. His face was bluish white, his swollen lips a delicate shade of lavender. Gasher looked up.
"You!" he snarled.
"Me," Roland agreed. He fired once, and the left side of Gasher's head disintegrated. The man went flying backward, blood-stained yellow scarf unraveling, and landed on top of the Tick-Tock man. His feet drummed spastically on the iron grillwork for a moment, and then fell still. The gunslinger shot Brandon twice, fanning the hammer of his revolver with the flat of his right hand. Brandon, who had been bent over Oi for another stroke, spun around, struck the wall, and slid slowly down it, clutching at one of the tubes. Green swamp light spilled out from between his loosening fingers. Oi limped to where Jake lay and began licking his pale, still face. Copperhead and Hoots had seen enough. They ran side by side for the small door through which Tilly had gone to get the dipper of water. It was the wrong time for chivalry. Roland shot them both in the back. He would have to move fast now, very fast indeed, and he would not risk being waylaid by these two if they should chance to rediscover their guts. A cluster of bright orange lights came on at the top of the capsule-shaped enclosure, and an alarm began to go off, in broad, hoarse blats that battered the walls. After a moment or two, the emergency lights began to pulse in sync with the alarm. 35. Eddie was returning to Susanna when the alarm began to wail. He yelled in surprise and raised the Ruger, pointing it at nothing.
"What's happening?"
Susanna shook her head. She had no idea. The alarm was scary, but that was only part of the problem. It was also loud enough to be physically painful. Those amplified jags of sound made Eddie think of a tractor trailer horn raised to the 10th power. At that moment, the orange arc sodiums began to pulse. When he reached Susanna's chair, Eddie saw that the command and enter buttons were also pulsing, in bright red beats. They looked like winking eyes.
"Blaine, what's happening?" he shouted. He looked around but saw only wildly jumping shadows. "Are you doing this?" Blaine's only response was laughter, terrible mechanical laughter that made Eddie think of the clockwork clown that had stood outside the House of Horrors at Coney Island when he was a little kid.
"Blaine, stop it!" Susanna shrieked. "How can we think of an answer to your riddle with that air raid siren going off?"
The laughter stopped as suddenly as it began, but Blaine made no reply. Or perhaps he did. From beyond the bars that separated them from the platform, huge engines powered by frictionless slow-trans turbines awoke at the command of the dipolar computers the TikTok man had so lusted after. For the first time in a decade, Blaine the Mono was awake and cycling up toward running speed.